is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. And once again, I'm so lucky to finally pin Sue Mosbacher down to talk to her. And I think she's got a really intriguing subject. She's going to talk about a couple of gifts she has made. And Sue, didn't you promise us that it's not going to be too hard?
Oh, it's so easy. So
okay,
easy.
Promise.
I promise.
Even I can do it.
Even you can do it. And this is something you could even do with kids and grandkids too. It's very, very easy. Especially the first one is super easy.
Oh, okay. So the first one I think you're going to talk about is flavored salts. And I have to say that you gave me in the past a little present of the flavored salts. And I have to admit, it was so pretty. It was iridescent and it was a pink color. And I have to admit, it was just so pretty. I could put it in the windowsill and look at it. And
then
I had a problem
on decoration.
It did become a decoration.
Eat your food.
I know.
That's so funny that you said that, Debbie, because one of the things I tell people is when you preserve food and you store it, you're supposed to store it in a cool, dry, dark place because the sunlight will impact the quality. And if you put it on the windowsill, it becomes decoration. And that's what you did.
That's what I did.
But it is pretty. It's very pretty.
It is. And I it was this pinky red and it
that would have been the wine salt.
Ooh, and it fit right into the holidays.
Yeah.
So, how did you do that?
Well, you basically just mix two ingredients and let the salt do its magic. And so, I don't know if you've ever salted cabbage to make sauerkraut or you put salt on your food, but you notice that one of the things that salt does is it pulls moisture out from your food. And so what we do is, and for example, last night I made sriracha salt. So I just squirted sriracha sauce in the salt and then the salt pulls the moisture from that sauce and it absorbs the flavor and the moisture evaporates. And then what you're left with is a flavored salt that's nice and dry. And your purpley salt was wine. And what I did with that was I took, and I always like to tell people, a bottle of wine minus a glass or two. And then you just simmer it in a pot until most of the liquid evaporates and you have a slurry on the bottom. And then you let it cool a little bit. And then you just put some, I like coarse sea salt, and you just put the sea salt in it, you stir it up, and then you let it dry. And there's a couple of ways that you can let it dry. But the big thing is as it dries, any remaining moisture evaporates. The salt pulls that moisture out and it helps it evaporate. And then it just absorbs the flavor. And then you have a beautiful purple salt with the sriracha salt. It's a beautiful orange. And then I've done it with citrus rind. And that way you get a little bit of citrus flavor in there. You use it with chicken. And then I like to do it with herbs and garlic. And you just chop them all up with the salt. And the salt pulls the moisture from all the little herbs. And it essentially dehydrates the herbs. And it absorbs the flavor. And it dehydrates the chopped garlic that you add in there. And then when you add it as a seasoning, you not only get the saltiness, but you get the flavor of whatever you mixed it with. And it's just bursting with flavor. It just really adds a lot to your meals.
So, okay, I've got a couple yummy of questions. I'm ready to do this.
Okay, but let me tell you how.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to start with the simplest one, and you can use sriracha salt is what I like to use because it's a thick sauce. You could use other flavorings. You just don't want it to be super runny. It needs to be thick. And so what you do is you just take I like to use a cookie tray, and I like to use the small toaster oven ones because I don't make that much at one time. Although last night I did, I had a roasting pan and I had it filled. But you take some kind of a pan with edges on the side, and then you lay down parchment paper, and then you just take a bowl, and you can use any kind of salt that you like. It really depends on your preference for the texture. I like to use coarse sea salt, but you could use regular table salt. You could use kosher salt, coarse fine grind, whatever you want. And so you just squirt the sriracha sauce in there. I think the official recipe that I started with called for 4 teaspoons of sauce to 1/2 cup of salt. But if you like it spicy, you just add more. And if you don't want it as spicy, you add less. The more you add, the brighter the orange. But anyway, you just mix it all together and then you pour it out onto the parchment paper. And you can either let it just dry at room temperature, and it might take a day or so. Or what I like to do is I turn the oven to 200 degrees. When it gets to 200 degrees, I turn it off, and then I just put the cookie sheet inside and I go to bed. And the next morning when I wake up, the warm air, it hasn't cooked it, but it just helps speed up the evaporation, and the salt is dry. I take a fork and I break up the clumps and it's done, and I put it in an airtight jar. Ta-da!
Wow.
It's that easy, and you can do it with lots of stuff.
Like, now, Sue, how long does it last? I mean, if you do it the right way, you take your jar of salt and you stick it in a cool,
dry
spot, dark.
Not the windowsill, Debbie.
Not the windowsill. How long will it last?
For best flavor, you'd want to use it in a couple of months. But I tend to make my sriracha salt, for example, strong. And so when I've made a large batch, I've used it for 6 months because, you know, you just use a pinch at a time and it has still had plenty of flavor.
Oh.
So over time, I mean, as long as you stored it safely, it's going to be safe to eat. It's just over time, the quality will degrade a little bit, but with salt, it's still going to be salty and it's still flavorful, and there won't be any mold growing in there because there's no moisture, and bacteria molds need moisture to grow. So you just keep it airtight and dry and you're good to go.
So airtight and dry.
Mm-hmm. And out of the light.
Does that mean you could use any type of jar to store it?
Yes, any type of jar.
Okay, so it doesn't have to be a ball jar or a canning
jar. I have
jar
mine. One of mine right now is in a little jar that used to have capers, and I just screw the lid on nice and tight. I fill it up full, and then if I get down to about 1/2 of it, then I'll put it in a smaller container because there's natural humidity in the air, and so if you have just a little bit in a large jar, there's a lot of air in there, and so it could start to rehydrate a little bit and get a little soft. So you want to have it in a container that fits the quantity that you have.
Okay, good. Oh gosh, sounds great. And I'm going to try it. But then you also have something else that you make, and you said it's not hard. What is that?
Oh, it's so easy. I made this last night too. It's technically a vinaigrette dressing, but I use it as a fruit shrub. And all it is fruit. And the first time I made it was with strawberries. Last time I made it with blackberries. And it's something that you can do if you find a bag of frozen fruit in your freezer that's gotten a little icicly. And you just basically take your fruit and you put it in a container, and then you cover it with vinegar, enough vinegar to cover the product. And then you cover the container and let it sit overnight. And that way the fruit will flavor the vinegar. So I had my blackberries and I covered them with just plain old white vinegar and I let it sit overnight. And so then the vinegar turns a gorgeous purple. And I've done this with strawberry and it's a beautiful red. And so you just let it sit overnight and then you strain out the solids and then you just have this beautiful flavored vinegar. And then you measure how much you have. And for example, I had 2 1/2 cups. And so in a pot, I put the 2 1/2 cups of vinegar, the flavored vinegar, 2 1/2 cups of sugar, and you bring it to boil. And then you can it in jars with just a 1/4 inch headspace, 10 minutes at under 1,000 feet. I'm over that, so I canned it for 15 minutes. And then what you do is it's a sweet flavored syrup, essentially, and you mix that with sparkling water, and it's a wonderfully refreshing, almost like a It's a, almost like a carbonated soda, but it's just the fruit, the vinegar, and the sugar. And it sounds really weird because there's vinegar in there, but the sugar offsets it. And so it has a nice tart taste. And so you just mix it with your sparkling water and you've got a great drink. It's a holiday drink that's non-alcoholic, that's bubbly, very fun and easy.
That does sound fun. I have to admit, you threw me off though with the vinegar.
Vinegar, and, I know. And
it just, but I guess what you're saying, you know, really makes sense that it offsets, you know, you've got the sugar. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
And your reaction is what most people have when I tell them what's in there. So in the classes, what I normally do is I will have, we mix them up and then we mix it with the sparkling water and we have everybody try it and they're like, oh, this is great, this is so delicious, I guess what's in there. And when we tell them vinegar, they say, what? And it's like, if you stop and think about it, you can taste a little of the tartness, but the flavoring of the fruit and then the sugar, and it's not like you're drinking half a cup of the syrup. You just put a tablespoon or so into a glass of a sparkling water, so it just flavors it and gives it a little bit of sweetness, and it's delicious.
Wow. Now, what kind of flavors have you done? I know I'm very impressed. You mentioned earlier that the blackberries, and mm-hmm. you actually picked them yourself because they're growing in your yard, which sounds very impressive. You're growing your own blackberries.
Oh, nature's growing them. I just pick them. We cut them back.
It's the Himalayan variety, you said.
Yeah, the invasive kind.
Right. But they still
keep it under control.
Okay. And they get blackberries.
Yes.
Which is fabulous. Now you've done strawberries.
Yep. And I've done mango. And I had some frozen mango. And so I tend to use it if I'm not trying with the fresh, I'll use my old frozen fruits that I shouldn't say, because I'm supposed to be really good at this, but I find things in the freezer sometime. And sometimes somebody other than me puts things in the freezer and they just kind of crumple the bag up and throw it in there and it gets covered up. And I pull out this blob of ice fruit.
Wow.
And so I'll let that thaw, and then it's not something I could use for a smoothie or something like that, but I'll use that to make the flavored vinegar.
I have to admit, Sue, here's another confession. I have many times thrown those blobs away, mm-hmm. not realizing that they could be used for something else.
Yeah. And you can also use them to make the second flavoring or second ferment in a kombucha. You could do that. You could use them to cook down to get the juice from them, and then you could use that to make a jelly, because jellies are made from just juice. So yeah,
there's
just because something's an ice blob in the freezer doesn't mean that it's necessarily garbage. They're, you know, depending on what it is, but you can find ways to resurrect those things.
That Some is them, wonderful, because I do hate throwing things away, and I especially well, they never get thrown away, they end up in compost, but even still, you know, I hate to compost. So going back to these wonderful flavors, how do you store them and how long do they last?
So if you can them, then they're shelf stable. So again, you put them in a cool, dry, dark place out of the light. And we recommend people eat them within a year for the best quality. After a year, and I've had some that I keep around because I'll do show and tell with them. And then after they've been on the circuit for a while, it's like, I think I'll eat this now. The color's not as bright and vibrant, but the taste is still really good. So the big thing is keeping them out of the sunlight, because sunlight will cause the quality and the color especially to decline.
What happens if you're lazy like me and you don't want to can it? Can you just put it
in the fridge? Yeah.
Okay.
You could even freeze it too. You just have to make sure that the container that you have is straight edges so that it doesn't expand and crack a shoulder jar, and make sure it has some room for expansion. But then you could just put it in the freezer.
Wow. That sounds
fabulous.
And there's
so much sugar in there, and it's vinegar, that it will last a long time. I don't know how long, but it will last fine in the refrigerator. And I like to make mine in the little 4-ounce jars. Because if I'm just making them in, you know, just for myself to mix with some water, and I found that like a little 4-ounce jar, if I'm going to make a quart of the mixture, or the drink with the water, I just pour the whole little 4-ouncer in, and that way I just work with one little jar at a time.
Oh, great, great. Well, Sue, we did run out of time, but thank you for your wonderful ideas and for sharing them with us. We'll have to have you come back again. Yes, yes, absolutely. Bye, Sue.
Bye-bye, Debbie. Thank you.
This is KAADLP 103.5 FM, Sonora, California.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties, and I'm back at the Amador office. So fortunate to talk with Scott Onetto. Hello, Scott.
Hi, Debbie. Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to see you. And we're going to talk about pruning. It's in February, and
it is.
And that's about when we always thought about pruning
exactly.
fruit trees.
If you look back at our farmer's almanac, it seems like that was what you were supposed to do in February,
that's
huh?
That's what we were supposed to do. Yeah. But things have really changed through the years regarding pruning. And I have to admit, I'll just relay some of my personal experience. When I started with the Master Gardener program as a coordinator, and that was back in 2011, and I have to thank you, you sent me to all the Master Gardener trainings so I would learn how to do it and be more up to date. And I, when it came to fruit production, I was so shocked to find out there was such a thing as summer pruning.
Yeah, yeah, summer pruning. It wasn't a word probably 30 years ago,
no,
right? 20
no,
years ago when
no,
we learned about
no.
pruning.
Everything that I was taught, it was wintertime only. That is the only time you
dormant
pruned.
Dormant prune, yeah.
Dormant pruning. Yeah. But now things have really changed, and there are some fruit trees that you just really have to wait and prune them in the summertime. Mm-hmm. One of them is apricots,
yeah.
and the other one is cherries. Mm-hmm. So you just, many of the fruit trees, it's probably best if you can wait until summer.
Exactly.
Kind of thinking back through, you know, just having fruit trees in our life, you know, through the years, you know, we've existed with fruit trees for years and years and years, for centuries and centuries. And I don't think they pruned or even thought about pruning trees back then. It just kind of going to the basic question, why do we even have to prune them?
Yeah, why prune?
Why don't we just leave them alone?
And we could. Yeah. Kind of, I guess, similar to so many things, right? Why do we mow the lawn and all
oh,
of
that's
those
true.
Things? Yeah.
That's
yeah,
true.
I think the word that would come to mind would be convenience and yes. probably aesthetics, right?
So, oh, that's true.
And I guess the other big word that I would throw in there would be production,
oh,
right? So
right.
we do it for those three main reasons. You know, first, we prune because we want to, you know, train the tree for structure and form. We want to keep the tree at a manageable height, right? So, you know, if we don't train or prune our tree, we can easily have a tree that's 15, 20, 30 feet tall. And there's nothing
yes.
wrong with that, but,
right.
you know, when it comes to picking fruit off of a tree that's 20 foot tall, that often entails a ladder or...
Oh, I know.
Yeah, and who
a
wants to
ladder.
Do that? Yes, an actual orchard ladder.
Yes.
And if you've
yes.
ever been on a three-legged ladder...
It's scary.
It's a little scary when you get towards the top.
I don't want to do it.
I don't either. Yeah, so thank goodness for semi-dwarf trees and,
yes,
and
yes.
dwarf trees. So I think convenience is a big thing. Production is also a really big thing. You know, we prune because, you know, often... Sunlight initiates flower production, right? The formation of flowers.
That's true.
And so if we prune trees properly so that they can maximize the amount of sunlight that actually hits the developing buds that will ultimately flower and then form fruits. That also, of course, right. Helps because we can get more fruit off of those trees. And so that's probably number two. And then I guess aesthetics, we prune trees to, you know, get rid of all of those leggy limbs and, you know, try to keep the tree looking. You know, often these are sometimes, you know, key elements in our landscape, in our backyard or front yard, and we want them to look really good. And so pruning them is often done just so they look good.
You know, if you've ever, I mean, sometimes I've walked into a house that was maybe built in the 30s, 40s, mm-hmm. or 50s, and every tree has either been a nut tree or a fruit tree.
Interesting.
Because back in that era, that's what you did. I mean, if you were going to plant a tree,
yeah, you planted something you could eat.
Right, right. Yeah. And canning, of course, mm-hmm. was a bigger deal, and people were trying to do everything they could to provide for their families.
That's so true.
But they're beautiful trees.
Yeah,
I mean, the flowers are spectacular.
Yeah, and often those were trees that were, you know, not on any, I guess you could say, developed root stock. They were on their own root, and these were often standard trees that, you know, often got to 30, 40 feet tall.
Oh, that's true.
Right? Yeah.
That's true.
So it's really come a long way in the last 20, 30 years in terms of, you know, now we often, when we, you know, go to purchase a new tree, they might be on a semi-dwarf or dwarf rootstock, which basically limits the height of the tree,
right.
And may often provide some other benefits in terms of disease resistance pathogen resistance in the soil. So
with some of the newer varieties,
yeah,
they're a little bit easier, which is wonderful. Now, what is the main reason why we've gone to summer pruning?
Yeah, so it's been kind of fascinating to see this sort of trend, and you know, I'm not sure exactly the exact history of how and when it happened, but it seems like it's been, you know, fairly recently in the last 10 to 15 years, we've seen sort of this increase in summer pruning, basically waiting till after that season's fruits are harvested, and then going through and doing some pruning, basically, right? To,
mm-hmm.
to get rid of, you know, dead, dying, diseased limbs, but also opening the tree up and just, you know, kind of bringing that tree down to a manageable height. And
right.
So it has been a fairly recent trend, but it's been a trend that we've actually been seeing tons of benefits, right?
Yes, yes.
I mean, it's so much nicer being out pruning trees in September when it's, you know, still warm and it's daylight and it's not raining.
Right.
Who wants to be out 25, 30 degrees out?
Not at all.
Some of the other benefits that we've seen with summer pruning has been less disease, as we talked about, right?
So
especially things that are so susceptible to some of the bacterial diseases like apricots and cherries. That's one of the reasons why we try not to do winter pruning with them, because they're spread typically by splashing water. And so you open up a wound.
Right.
Then those trees are susceptible to any bacterium that can get in there through splashing water. So, you know, avoiding any of those fresh cuts when there's moisture around is really critical. So summer pruning has helped tremendously with that.
So are the diseases more present in the wintertime than they are in the summertime? Or is it basically because of the splashing water?
That's really, yeah, they're around all the time, but it's really that splashing water.
It's the splashing water.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we often avoid overhead irrigation in those trees as well if we can, just because that's another way to, spread that pathogen, those bacteria, by sprinklers hitting the trunks and, mm-hmm. and branches. So yeah, just trying to avoid any type of splashing water mm-hmm. is really critical. But so that's why this, you know, late summer pruning, it's dry, the chance of rain is low. Those wounds will heal often very quickly because it is dry out, so they heal very quickly. So that's been a really added benefit. And then the other benefit that I've seen with summer pruning has also been the decrease in water sprouts, I guess you could call them, or these. Often, you know, when we prune in the winter, we see these trees in the springtime when they flush out with growth. You just get a tremendous amount of sprouts, right? Of
long limbs,
spindly limbs. Yes,
coming from the trunk.
Yes,
and they can take over.
Yeah, they can take over, and they tend to be unfruitful, right?
Right.
They tend to be mostly, you know, they make lots and lots of leaves and fill up the canopy, but they just don't produce a whole lot of fruit. That's just one of the, you know, that's something we see. It's not, you know, specific to fruit trees. We see that with any type of plant that we prune during the winter. They often, you know, respond that way in the spring. And we've seen with summer pruning is just the opposite, right? It reduces that the plant's response to, you know, send up all of those, you know, those spindly shoots.
And so why make more work for yourself?
Exactly, right? Because then you just have to go in and do more thinning
and
pruning.
Right, more pruning. Yeah. Absolutely. No, that is really great advice. Now, what about if by some chance you move into a piece of property and you have an old fruit tree, one that's been around? Should you just give up?
Yeah.
I mean, one that's out of control.
Yes, yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah. We've all seen those, right?
Right. Oh, gosh. Is there anything you can do?
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably when you think about winter pruning.
Okay.
You know, that's, you know, some of the advantages of winter pruning is being able to take off a considerable amount of the canopy if you needed to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you have an overgrown tree and you want to try to bring it down to a more manageable level, that's typically, you know, the winter pruning is really a great tool to do that.
Okay.
Often we'll recommend that you can take up to, you know, about a third of the canopy at any given time. And that's kind of a guiding rule. I've seen people take off more than that, but especially for those really large overgrown trees. But depending on the health of the tree, the size, you know, you may want to take off, you know, up to about a third and maybe do that to a more manageable size over the period of maybe 2 or 3 years. Don't try to do it all in one sitting. Yeah, you know, it's not a race. It's, you know, you want to do it and allow the tree to be able to respond to that. You know, it's a pretty severe.
It is.
Yeah.
That would be a severe.
Yeah. And so I've seen, you know, really large apple trees, olive trees, 30, 40 feet tall that, you know, people have successfully brought down to 8, 10, 12 feet.
Is that right?
Yeah, but you just want to do it over, like I said, over a period of 2 to 3 years. Just slowly bring that height down and, you know, try to get some new fruiting branches to develop that are at a lower height. As you know, we've got some great handouts.
We do.
Yeah, so
we
if people, you know, find themselves in that, you know, situation, we've got some really good publications with pictures showing how to successfully do that.
Right. No, the university, they have all kinds of websites as far as the home garden, as far as the orchard, the particular tree. Once you get on that website, it's a complete care. I mean, just everything.
There's a treasure trove of just stuff, right?
It is. It's amazing. You could spend every day. There's so much to read and you're just not going to cover it all. So it's a wonderful resource. Now, also, on the Central Sierra website, we have a listing of all the classes. So if anybody wanted to learn how to train their trees or anything about gardening, that's a great resource. We have the Master Gardeners there. We have a listing of all the free public classes, and they're all free.
And if you're not, if summer pruning kind of scares you, you know, the Master Gardeners hold classes typically in that time of the year on how to summer prune, and they're just super helpful for being able for just get a hands-on experience of how to go about doing it.
Right. No, and that website, just check it out. It's Central Sierra Cooperative Extension. I typically Google it. It comes right up, and then I find all kinds of resources. And believe it or not, we're also going to put this radio show on the Central Sierra website, but it will be under Tuolumne Master Gardeners. So it's Master Gardeners, then Tuolumne County, and we're starting to archive our radio shows there. So Scott, I really wanted to thank you, but we ran out of time. Oh. We'll have to have you come back again.
Yes, thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us. If you would like to contact us for more information, remember you can contact our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912, or you can look us up on the kaad-lp.org website. Look for Over the Garden Gate. Thank you.